the tzedakah tatzel umavet. Tzedakah saves you from death. And the word tzedek or tzedakah has two interpretations. One is justice and one is charity or kindness. So it saves you from death. So what we want to do is find out, first doing it as justice, how justice would save you from death, and then how kindness or charity would save you from death. That's our discussion for today. The question is that justice and kindness is an act. So therefore, if you do certain acts, when you, in other words, like if you keep Torah, you just keep halacha. I mean, you're doing justice and you'll do kindness if you just do halacha. The answer is that Mishle is not a book of law. It's a book of Musar, of guidance for a certain type of life. And when they talk about justice and charity, they're talking about a certain personality. And that personality will save you from death. In other words, we hold that perfection. In other words, we hold that you start out with your personality that was given to you by your parents, either by genes or the way they raised you, by society, by the schools you go to. They all affect your personality. But we hold that your personality should develop based on the ideas of Torah. Okay? And at a certain point, I mean, when you're 13, 14, and the mind is developed, then you could start delving into these things to change your personality based on the ideas of Torah. So when we talk about tzedakah here, when we talk about justice, when we talk about charity, we're talking about a certain personality. Okay? So that is the question. The question is, does it mean literally? Yes, we are taking death literally. In general, when you learn Torah, you should learn Torah exactly the way you view the physical world. When you view the physical world, you trust your five senses until there's a contradiction. Like, for instance, you see a railroad tracks come together, and then where you walk over to them, they're separated, and then somehow they got together further down the line. So the contradiction forces me to question. The first time I saw it, then I would trust my senses and say, well, the railroad tracks come together. But if then when a train comes down and a train doesn't derail, I say, hey, there's a contradiction. Then the contradiction starts questioning. Is it reality, or is it the way I perceive things that's wrong? Okay? Now, same thing with Torah. You always read Torah, take it literally, unless you have a question that it's impossible to take it literally. So we take death, the way it says in the Pasuk, death, we take it literally. If we cannot come to any conclusion, or we show that this is impossible, then we'll have to take it metaphorically. So we didn't get to that point yet. So the question is that first of all, it doesn't save you from death. I mean, everybody dies in this world. That's first of all. So the question is, what does it mean, save you from death? Okay? And now, there are two causes of death. Two causes. One is that which is outside your control. You're sitting in your living room comfortably, an airplane loses control, flies into your living room. I mean, that's totally out of your control. There are other parts in your life that is totally within your control. Okay? So, Mishle always deals, and all results of Mishle is only as a result of your actions. When you're dealing with that which is outside your control, that is where we turn to God. Then you have to understand how to relate to God and how God relates to you. But Mishle, whenever you're in Mishle, it's always talking about what is within your responsibility to take care of yourself. And the results is only insofar as you took care of your responsibility. And you will literally save yourself from death if you take care of your responsibility. And they're saying there's two possibilities of what they're saying. Either they're saying that you need the personality of justice, which will save you from death, or you need the personality of charity or kindness will save you from death. By the way, all Musar is that way. The subject of Musar deals with the area of your responsibility. Okay? With God, God's responsibility, that there's other areas of Torah. That's how God relates to you, or how you're supposed to relate to God. That's the out of your control. Mishle deals that which is totally within your control. I think we have to ask the question, what is justice? One time I had an example of justice. There are three people that want to rob a bank, okay? One guy's job is to be in the getaway car. One guy is to hold the gun on all the people so that they shouldn't interfere. The third guy is to get the money, okay? Now, if anyone doesn't do their job, then the robbery will fail, right? So justice is where everybody does their job. The only thing is, this case that I've given is they are doing something incorrect also, but I'm showing you even crime can only be successful insofar as they all work together, insofar as they're just. But insofar as you're unjust, you're going to have to fail. In our case, since they're unjust in the overall picture, so therefore they will fail. But the only thing is, the example shows only that that you must do your job to be successful, and a society will be successful only insofar as each person does his job. So justice is knowing your place in society and doing it. Okay? I'd like to clarify this insofar as personality is concerned. Most people do justice because they're afraid they're going to get caught. There's a fear of getting caught. But little things, if they could get away with little things, they'll do it because they're not afraid of it. You see? But the person that lives, that his personality is a personality of justice, is a person that recognizes his place in society and recognizes that he must do things whether he could get away with it or not get away with it, whether he'll be recognized by society as a wonderful person or won't be. That is the personality of justice, where he does it only because he recognizes the importance of justice. The question is, since there's a personality of justice, so the question is, let's say, for instance, I live in a house, I'm a wealthy person, I have all my needs, and I don't relate to society. Okay? I'd like to answer that in two ways. First way is that there are debts. For instance, you have to pay bills. How you pay your bills on time, if you can't pay it on time, there's things like that. That's part of justice. There's also, we hold that debt, that when you owe a debt, is not only in money, but if somebody did something to you, you also owe a debt. Like, for instance, Einstein, when they asked him about you know, about he created the idea, his theory. So they asked him, you know, about his credit, you know, to take credit for it. He says he really can't take credit because he remembered one teacher advised him to read a certain book that made him look at things a certain way. One teacher gave him an answer to a question and a certain idea that guided him. He understanding what to do, different things. So he owed a debt. That debt, I mean, if in time, has to be repaid. Okay? There was an insurance man that had a very wealthy guy, and when he was in yeshiva, he had a rebbe that felt that opened up his mind a tremendous amount. When his son came into the business, it so happens that this rebbe, his teacher's son, also went into business of insurance, and they were both going after the same client. And the father said to the son, says, not only should you stay away from the client, but you should give him all the information you have to help him make the sale. Because he had appreciation to the father. It was a debt. He's paying back the debt of what he owes this teacher. And he paid it back through helping out the son. So you see that it's very hard. I'm not talking about kindness. I'm just talking about justice. It's very hard to get out of it. That's one way of answering the question. There is another way. And the question is, what should motivate you to live a life of justice? What should motivate you to live a life of justice? That's the question. There are two things. If a there's justice looking at it if you accept God or if you don't accept God, okay? If you do not accept God, then your being here is just a chance, okay? And therefore, my existence or my non-existence, or my being just or not just, I mean, is of no consequence. Because the whole thing, there's no purpose. You cannot look at life as a purpose. You could only look at life as I am there. Life does not dictate how you should live. So therefore, there's no reason to do justice. I mean, it depends. If you feel like doing justice, you do justice. Your personality is, and if you don't know from a God, then there's no free will. There's no free will, so whatever you do is based on your personality. So whether you will keep justice or you won't keep justice has nothing to do with you. It has to do what was decreed based from birth. That's it. Goodbye. But so therefore, justice could only be motivated only if you have a God. Other people that talk about justice and kindness, and they don't hold from God, that's only because their personality. So they say we should, but they can't say, I should do it. They could say, that's my personality, I'm going to do it. But they can't force me to do it, and they can't say, I should do it. You can't say should. You see? You can only say should if there's a purpose in life. There's a purpose, so then that I must live in line with that purpose. So therefore, the motivator of keeping justice is God. So therefore, even if you're on a desert island and there's nobody there, you still must live the life of justice. I mean, you can't act it out, but the idea of justice and recognizing the importance of justice, that's part and parcel of relating to God. So therefore, you can never say, even if you're on a desert island, you should still study about justice and get the personality of justice, even though you can't get it, can't carry it out, because that is your purpose. You see? So therefore, for those two reasons, one is practically, if you're living in a society, you must be involved. There's always justice. As long as you deal with anybody, there's always justice. And if you don't deal with anybody, if you're on a desert island, then the only thing that can motivate you for justice is God. Once it's God, so then you're obligated to get this personality of justice, even if you can't carry it out. Now the question is, how would this personality save you from death? And the question is, what would stop you from going for this type of personality? Why wouldn't you want this type of personality? What's there about this personality? You don't see many people having this personality. Why is it so difficult to attain? What's the difficulty about this personality, and what is it that people don't want? And what do you need to get this personality? Let's take one answer at a time. We're going to show that there are many, many emotions that are against justice. One is responsibility. Being unjust is easier. You just do it. It's more in line with your personality. Like the Torah says, a person is born wild. It's more in line with the original personality. It's different. You have to change your original personality to be able to get to the second one. And the third answer was, it's not that obvious. The benefits are not that obvious insofar as living the life of justice is the living the life of wickedness is more obvious the benefits. So therefore, basically, to be able to live a life of justice, you have to pull out, you have to make a change in your personality. There's a certain humility that you must have, a certain removal of the ego to recognize that I am not the center of the universe, but I am just part of a system. I'm nothing more than a part of a system. What a star is to astronomy, I am to justice. I am to the system of, I'm just one cog in society that just responsibility to do what is right. So there's a certain amount of humility. And therefore, to be able to be just, I must think about my place in society. I must be a thinker. You can't just say, I want to be just. You must study justice. And justice could be studied in two ways. One is through studying halacha. You study Sanhedrin, the tractate which deals with the different court system and how the government is run, and how to deal in different civil law and criminal law. That helps you see justice. Then when you study Musar, then you study different aspects of justice, the ideas of justice, and how to look at justice, and how to get a personality of justice. So there's a training of the mind and a moving away from that area which affects the way you think, because the emotions affect your thinking process. And when you have to make decisions, you want to make decisions totally with a clear mind. So therefore, if you are living the life of justice, then what you have done is that you can look at life and look at what is the correct actions and how to make decisions in life in a most rational way without your emotions interfering. And what kills a person is where his emotions interfere with his decision making. I mean, a simple thing. I mean, if a diabetic is going to eat candy all day, I mean, you know, that's not too good. That will kill him. But, I mean, it's a simple thing, but there are many, many ways. I mean, for instance, all the negative emotions like jealousy, competition, and all these type of emotions lead to great tension. I mean, yeah, I can't tolerate it, bothers me. There's different tension. We know that tension takes away from life, takes away from the value of life, and it takes away from life itself because tension causes, we know that tension causes problems in the physical body. So all these things, the way you make, decisions, the conflicts within, you see, all these things can actually shorten your life. And you are the cause for your own death. You see? But if you live a life of justice, first you must be a chacham, a wise person, to know how to decide what is just and what is not just. So you're a thinker. And two, you don't allow your emotions, since you now have the humility, you're only part of a whole system, you have enough humility to make correct decisions and not allow the emotions to interfere with your decision-making factor. So you will make the correct decisions, and that way you will live a longer life that is you're destined to, and you personally will not stop it. You're not the cause of your own death. But your death might come because of nature or something outside of you. That's not you causing your death. You causing your own death is by making stupid decisions and being in conflict. Those are the two things that cause you to die early. And therefore, when you are objective, meaning that if you're just and you just recognize that if your personality recognizes that I'm just part of a system, then it will actually save me from death. And we're going to discuss today how kindness could save you from death. And then we have to define what's the difference between justice and kindness. The question that we have to ask is, what do you need to be kind? Right. Kindness is where I do something for another person what the other person needs. Okay? Certain person has a certain need, and I satisfy that need. I'm not obligated. It's not like I owe a debt. I'm not obligated, but I satisfy another person's need. That is kindness. Now, therefore, if that is kindness, then the question is, what knowledge do I need to know to be kind? Somebody said, well, just ask them what they need, okay? The answer is that sometimes some people want, let's say a person says, I need drugs. Well, then it's not kind to give them the drugs. You understand? He's addicted to something, and he says, give it to me. I mean, that is not kind. That's cruel. To give in to his desire at that time is cruel. So what you have to know is what is good for the human being and the nature or personality or psychological makeup of the person that you want to do. If you understand his personality, then you understand his needs. And then you have to evaluate whether that needs is a harm or it's no harm. If it's a harm, then you can't give in to that need. If it's not a harm, then you can grant it. Okay? The question is, what's the difference between need and want? The first thing is that, I don't know if we need that for our discussion. But let's say, for instance, a person wants baseball cards. Now, there's no harm in having baseball cards, and he might not be addicted to it. It's not a need. Not a physical need, but he wants it. So kindness would say, since there's no harm in it, why shouldn't I grant him that desire? You see? So insofar as kindness is concerned, if it's a need, like he needs money to live, so then I definitely should give it to him. Then from Torah I'm obligated, but that's a real need. But the thing is that baseball cards is not a real need. He could live without it. But if I want to satisfy his desire, that would be kindness. There's nothing wrong. There's no harm in it. Okay? So therefore, to be kind, he has to have knowledge of what is harmful and what is beneficial to a human being in general, to the person in particular, and the psychological makeup of the person. In other words, like this. There are some times where a compliment could harm a person. Some people can't take a compliment. Some people feel guilty when they have a compliment. So therefore, a compliment is not always a kind thing. You have to know the psychological makeup. You have to know the psychological makeup of a person to know what to do. So therefore, to really be kind, you must have two pieces of knowledge. What is beneficial for the human being and this person in particular, and two, or at least what is not harmful, and two, what is the psychological makeup of the human being. Yesterday we said that the justice is when you have humility, when you recognize that you're part and parcel of the system, so you can think correctly. Kindness is when you have the knowledge of psychology. Okay? Now, there are two reasons for causing harm to yourself. One is, I don't know what's good for me. Two is, I don't know my motives, my psychological makeup, what motivates me. You see? Now, if I have one without the other, if I have justice without kindness, there is a certain success that I will have, because I evaluate the consequences and I look at things objectively, so I can't protect myself. But if I don't know my motives and I don't know my psychological makeup, then I might be doing things without realizing what I'm doing, and that could harm me. You see what I mean? So the thing is that both justice and kindness could save you from death. The only thing is, justice can only save you a certain amount. There's different levels of how much it could save you. Justice could save you practically, but however, sometimes your psychological makeup can make you make mistakes without you realizing it, because you don't know who you are, so you're just affected by it without realizing how you're making mistakes. So therefore, the person that can protect himself totally is the person that understands the psychological workings of a human being. You see? So therefore, the person that recognizes what is good and what is bad, that's justice. What is good for a person, what is bad for a person, that's justice. And then what the needs are, or wants, or desires, that comes from psychological. So therefore, if you have this two knowledge, you protect yourself from consequences, and you can actually protect yourself from death. The question is, what gives a person security? We're not talking about physical security. We're talking about emotional security. Right, the first possibility is knowledge of the self gives you security. Now, could you tell me, no, that's a good answer, but the only thing is, I'd like to know more precisely, if I could know more precisely what that knowledge is. In other words, the answer is still vague, it doesn't help me much. You know what I mean? To help me, I have to have it a little clearer. We're saying that confidence is being confident about your actions, okay? So we're asking the question, in other words, and even if you make a mistake, the statement was that even if you make a mistake. Now the question is, what causes the mistake? And the answer is, either it could be you're lacking facts, or it's an emotional, something emotionally affected your decision. Okay? So we're saying that only if you don't have enough information, then you could be confident. Okay? And you could have that security. All right. But if it's emotional, then you sense that it's the emotion. There's a you sense it. It's, and therefore you go and you're not going to have that security. The question is what is the difference between security and insecurity? Okay, security is where I do not have any conflict about my decision. About, in other words, the main important thing in life is making decisions. That's what you do practically every day of your life. You're constantly making decisions, okay? If you have confidence in your decision, means you do not have any conflict about it. There's no conflict. There's not a part of you that says, maybe I'm wrong, okay? Insecurity means is that I make a decision, but I still feel insecure. Now, there's two types of being secure. There's certain people that they accept the way they were raised, what is right, and they feel secure by living along with society. That type of security, first of all, either you have it or you don't have it, okay? And secondly, that type of security breaks down in areas where your past does not help you. In certain decisions where it does not help you, that security will break down. In other words, you constantly need that past, either society or some authority, constantly there to help you, you see? So it'll break down in those areas where it doesn't relate to society or to your own, whatever is causing that emotional security. So the question is how do you get the confidence to feel secure about your decision-making process? Okay? That is the question. I think there are two things. There are two things you need to get that security in your decision-making, the confidence in your decision-making, where you make decisions. One is that there must be a training of how to make decisions. It has to be a training. It doesn't come natural. Some people it might be natural to a certain extent, but there's a certain training in how to make decisions. Okay? A lot of our discussions are in particular cases where we discuss how to make decisions in different cases. And we've discussed the different cases. Okay? The other thing is that sometimes, even with all your training, there is an emotion that gives you that makes you insecure about your decisions. There's emotional insecurity, which doesn't allow the training to work. Then the only answer to that is to investigate the emotion that brings about this insecurity. Definitely the first step is training the mind how to make decisions. That's the first step, how to think correctly. The question is what is the purpose of education? The first thing that we have to distinguish is what is knowledge? Is knowledge information or is knowledge understanding of the information? There's two different things. Information by itself, if you just memorize it, and you don't, you could memorize information without understanding it, without having a clear view of it. Okay, that's two types of that. In other words, there's two types of education. There's one just informational, and you just memorize the information, right? And then there's understanding of the information. Okay? Of course, education should give you an understanding. Okay? Now, there's two ways of studying. Even the understanding, there are two areas of study. One area of study does not pertain to me. Let's say I'm not going to be a math teacher and I'm not going into math, and I study the ideas of math. You see, or I study the ideas of physics just for the ideas itself. That's one type of purpose, just the idea itself. I just learned it for the ideas. And then the second type is practical. I learned for practical reasons. Either I need a job, or, like we said before, decision-making, learning about decisions, that's practical. Learning halacha is practical, and how halacha works, that's practical, you see. But then there's certain things that are not practical. It's just an idea. You're just curious about the idea. You're curious how a zipper works. You're curious how a ballpoint pen works. Just curiosity. There's no practical need for it. Okay? That's two types. All right, this lady made... Sarah says that it's still even if you're doing it for... just for the curiosity, Sarah says that that still in all it will benefit you, it'll train your mind. That is true, but there's still two different motives in studying. There's two different motives to study. One is just for the pleasure to satisfy your curiosity, and one is for a practical reason. Those are the two types of studies that you would have. The question is which one is correct? Which one of these two motives is correct? I think they're both correct. Sometimes you need practical knowledge, and sometimes you just want to satisfy your curiosity. They're both correct. Neither wrong with either one. The question is, does education last? The education that you have, does it last? Okay. There are different people. There are people that have memories and people that don't. Okay? So, of course, the people that have memories, they'll remember the information. People that don't will not remember the information. Okay? But, however, there is a benefit in how you think. As you develop, there's, even if you forget, it's not to remember this or that piece of information, but the information affects who you are. Knowledge affects who you are. Okay? And after a while, there is a change in your personality based on your knowledge. For better or for worse. I'll tell you what I mean by that. A righteous person will search for knowledge, and he'll develop his character along the lines of righteousness. An evil person, like Mao Zedong, was a teacher. He had knowledge, and he studied. And he came to, his conclusions started going towards evil. You see? So he used his knowledge towards evil, and he wasn't born evil. You understand? But through his thinking, the way he thought, he developed his personality to, and he started making decisions outside of his personality to do evil. You see? Being evil and being righteous is a development. Someplace in between is what I call mediocrity, where people just live their lives, all their lives, based on the way they were raised or their personality. They don't go out of the box. In other words, if you go to a kindergarten and look at three-year-olds playing, you'll see all the personalities that you see here in high school and you see in by adults. The personalities haven't changed much. The only difference between a child and an adult is an adult learned to hide their emotions, to cover their emotions. They have the same emotions, if you watch carefully, but they learn to cover it. It's a certain dignity that I don't show my emotions. Child shows their emotions more, but otherwise the personality doesn't change. For personality to change, there must be a development of the mind, that you start thinking differently. You see, that changes the personality, whether for better or for worse. Okay, the question that we're dealing with is why is it that certain people take to the world of ideas, they take the discussions, and certain people don't? I'd like to give one reason, okay, one motive. That is this. Okay, Rashi says in In Shemos Perek Aleph, Pasuk Yud, he says that they were afraid that they were going to go up from the land, that the Jews were going to go out of the land, right? So Rashi has a second interpretation. He says, like a person that curses himself, but he associates the curse in others, and it's as if it wrote, and we will go up from the land, and they will inherit it. Okay? So Rashi learns, Pshat, that going up from the land, they really said that the Jews will join up with the other nation, they'll go to war, and they really held. Now, if they go to war and they win the war, why should they go up from the land? Right? So they should really, what really would happen is that the Jews would keep the land if they won the war and chase the Egyptians out. You see? But that idea was so abhorrent to the Egyptians that they'd be thrown out of their land. They couldn't face that reality. And because they couldn't face that reality, so they changed the facts and they said, they'll escape and we'll lose our slaves. So therefore they changed the whole, the facts around of what they were really afraid of, because what they were really afraid of was so much against the grain of their nature that they couldn't accept, that idea, so they changed it. Okay, so anyway, we see from Rashi a psychological quirk of a human being that anything that is too painful, they deny. Okay? They could change facts around. They could do anything when something is too painful. So the reason why people turn away from new ideas is because it runs totally contrary to their personality. And they recognize that based on reality, they're going to have to change their lifestyle. And because of that, they refuse to accept. They refuse to accept the idea because it's so painful, and therefore a lot of people turn away from the truth because the alternative would be that they have to accept a lifestyle which is totally contrary to their personality. They don't want to get involved in changing their personality, so they just deny the argument or they turn off. You know, they just don't listen. That is I think that's a big reason why most people turn away from thinking about life and trying to find the truth in the search for life, is because of that reason. And somebody made an observation, Amir made an observation, that also a reason of why people don't change, they have two reasons. One is they feel that they have to make immediate change, and two, and they have to do everything at once. Okay? So they want to say that's another reason for not changing. Now let's understand that type of person that wants that. Okay, that wants to make the immediate change, and immediately and completely he has to be that person. Okay? The answer is the reason why he does that in that fashion is because he accepts the speaker as an authority. And he looks at him how authority looks at in other words, the person that listens to the authority projects onto the authority what the authority wants from him. And all your life, you always notice that when authority wanted something, they wanted it now and they wanted it perfect. You see? So therefore, you're not accepting it because you see the truth of the idea. You're accepting it because of the authority. So again, there's a certain... It's not... In other words, what I'm saying in a discussion, you accept it because reality dictates that it's true. That is very different than if you accept it because the thought mind will analyze how to do it. In other words, it would approach it based on the mind. But if you do not accept it based on the mind, and you're accepting it based on authority, that's not really accepting the idea. That's not an acceptance of the idea. Again, you're denying the idea and accepting it in a different framework because you can't refuse to see the idea. It's the same thing. Because you're accepting it based on authority and not based on the idea. So if you accept it based on authority, that is not an acceptance of the idea. So it's the same thing that we said before. So therefore, if you desire to do it immediately and do it perfectly, then realize that you're not really understanding the idea. If you understood the idea, you would say, yeah, it makes sense, and I should do it, and that's it. Now, how much could you do? I mean, then rationale will dictate how far you should go. I want to revisit we one time discussed strategy, and we did different verses in Judges.
Right.
I'd like to revisit one point. It says that the enemy, God decided to help the Israel, and they got Ehud ben Gera. He was, and they said that he was a, his hand was crippled. His hand was like short. I don't know if it didn't grow or was an accident. Seems like maybe it didn't grow. It atrophied. Anyway, now we said then that that people feel that a cripple is a weakness, you see, and therefore they didn't care that in other words they trusted him because they sensed the weakness, so they didn't feel he would do anything bad. Okay. So that's what we said last time. I was just thinking of one point that I'd like to add here, and that is that when people have a weakness, there's a certain feeling of, you know, they just have a sense of weakness, and something is wrong with them. It gives them a bad self-image, you see? Now, if you could overcome the bad self-image of some weakness you have, you could never know when that weakness can be used in a situation for your advantage. You understand? So that's all I wanted to add there, that point. I was just thinking about it, and I just wanted to add that point. You have to be careful whenever you're using strategy that it should be for a good purpose. If it's for a bad purpose, I mean, that's why we have... we have Musa to train you to think in just in terms of justice and kindness and not to harm people. Then you use strategy for the benefit of people. But if you have strategy and you use it for your own emotions, that's evil. That would be evil. So in other words, to use any type of strategy would be good if it's for a beneficial thing, and it's bad if it's for something harmful. All right, the question we're dealing with is, what are the different ways of expressing anger? One way is to show your anger either verbally or physically. That's one way. The other way is that the anger is covered up, held in. Okay? But however, when it's held in, there are two reasons why it's held in. One is a person is repressed. If a person is repressed and they hold in their anger, then they just suffer. Then the other person doesn't know you're angry and nothing happens to the other person. And all that happens to the repressed person is that he suffers because he has no outlet. Then there's another type of person that doesn't show his anger but has a plan to harm the person that is that he's angry against. He doesn't show his anger, so the person doesn't know he's angry, and then he hatches a plan, he makes up a plan, so as to destroy the person he hates. Okay, next question. What type of knowledge gives the best type of life? What type of knowledge gives the best life that the physical world has to offer. The first type of knowledge, the first step, what you need is knowledge how to make decisions. Okay? You have to have knowledge to make decisions. That is the first step in towards the best life. Hey, the question is, what makes up, what do you need to have the best life? What is necessary to have a good life? There are two things that you need to have a good life in the physical world. One is practical. One is practical so that you avoid consequences and avoid pain. And two is to remove inner conflict, right? One is from the physical world to make sure there's no consequences. Two is to remove inner conflict. And three is to have pleasure, right? Those are the three things you need. Three things, again, once again, three things you need for a happy life is practically to avoid consequences in the physical world, two, to remove conflict, and three, have pleasure. A person should have pleasure in the physical world. And the question is that when we say the life of pleasure, there's a question that sounds like a hedonistic, the hedonistic type of life. And so it seems like pleasure is bad, and that the argument is that a person should do things to some type of goal that an important type of goal, and that's what they should spend their life doing. That is the question against pleasure. There are two types of goals. There's a practical goal. That was the first part of our the best possible life was to remove consequences, so I have to have a goal. Like I have to make a living, so I have to make a certain amount of money. My goal is to make that money, so I shouldn't have the pain of not having enough money to live. You see? So there's a practical goal. That's definitely part and parcel of the good life, that you should satisfy your needs and remove different types of physical pain. You see? So therefore, that type of goal is definitely good. But however, if you create a goal, then the goal is only important only insofar as your mind is concerned, but it's not in line with reality. In other words, let's say, for instance, you want to get a 4.0 and there's no practical reason to have that. You understand? Getting into college, you could get a 3.9. You understand? I'm not saying it's true, but I'm just giving an example. But the thing is that beyond that which is practical, then it's no different than people doing an act, a worthless act. In other words, let's say, for instance, a person that wants money. Once he makes $1 million, he has all his needs. You understand? Like, for instance, they were just saying the wealthiest people are worth $30 and $40 billion. I mean, their act is a worthless act because what could they do with that money? They can't even spend it in a lifetime. I mean, in anything practical, I need an airplane, I need a car, I need 5 cars. I mean, I can't spend that type of money. It's totally frivolous to have a goal which is beyond reality. It's equal to a neurotic act where a person does an act that absolutely has no value. You see? So therefore, that type of goal is really not in line with reality. You created the goal, or society created the goal. But however, if that goal is just wasting your time, once it's beyond practicality. Pleasure means that I just enjoy that which I'm doing. I have a certain desire, And I satisfy that desire, that pleasure, physical pleasure. I'm talking about physical pleasures. Physical pleasures, it's not a fantasy. In other words, when you create a goal that's totally in your mind, that's totally a fantasy. It has nothing to do with reality, but a physical pleasure is real. I experience, it's something I experience. In fact, physical pleasures you make blessings on. You make blessings on physical pleasures. The question is what's the difference between a goal, or I want ice cream and I go out to get ice cream, so my goal is to get to the store to get ice cream? That is the question. The answer is that a goal, a fantasy goal, not a realistic goal, is that I create something important. I say this thing is important, and then I go, my satisfaction is doing something important, and important in itself is totally an ego type of a pleasure. It's totally a fantasy type of pleasure. So you create something, and then you go ahead and do it. But however, the goal to go to the store to get ice cream is to get, my purpose is to get a physical pleasure, something that I really experience. It's in reality. It's not in my mind. It's a physical thing that I experience. And so since I experience it, that's a real pleasure. But the other type of goal is you make it important. And fulfilling that importance, that is the pleasure. Fulfilling your own fantasy. It's no different than a neurotic act. In other words, there are three types of goals. There's the practical, that I have to have a certain amount of money to live, okay? Then there's two, I want a certain pleasure, and I need to do things to get that pleasure. And then there's a goal that's totally based on what you create. You create the goal, and it's based on importance. Okay? When you create a goal that's based on importance, that is, the whole idea of importance is not in the physical world. The physical world doesn't say importance. It's only your mind that makes it important. There's no such thing as importance. There's practically I have to live, so I have to eat, so I have to make money. And two, there's a physical enjoyment. In other words, like this, there are people that when they set up a physical type of pleasure, they attach importance to it. Like a person goes jogging, and then he says, I have to beat everybody and keep going faster, and he constantly checks his time. He's not enjoying the pleasure of jogging, he's enjoying the importance of going fast. So he's changing. So the importance does not exist only in the mind of the human. But if you enjoy the act of jogging, there's a physical pleasure in the experience. So then, if you just enjoy that, that is a physical experience. That's based on something real. It's not created in your mind. The difficulty with this idea is not a rational problem. It's an emotional, because people, when they start out in life, they start out with a relative value system, a value system that's in relationship to others. And so, therefore, that becomes the framework. When they hear that they should undo that relative value system, that runs against the emotions. And therefore, when it runs contrary to the emotions, so it becomes a hard idea to see. But really, it's not very difficult. One is a created idea. Importance itself is a creation of the mind. And the other two things, one is practical, to remove, to make sure you make a living and don't starve to death and you have your needs when you live. And the second type is a physical pleasure. It's a physical experience. It's a real thing. It's different than importance, than goals. Goals for gold's sake. I would just like to add about pleasure that learning itself is also a pleasure. There's an enjoyment to the development of ideas and seeing the ideas. Okay? But there are two benefits in learning. One is the enjoyment of the activity. It is a pleasure. And two, it gives you knowledge of how to operate in the physical world so that you could deal with the practical part of knowledge, the making decision part of knowledge, and to deal with that part of knowledge. That's the benefit of, those are the two benefits of learning. The enjoyment of learning and the practicality of learning. In other words, you could enjoy learning about the practicality. That's also an enjoyment in the ideas, but there is a benefit. But there is also an enjoyment just of ideas itself, even if there's no practical benefit. The Rambam says that the highest level of learning is learning for enjoyment. We learn for enjoyment. Where you relate directly to the learning, that you're drawn to the learning because you enjoy it. Right, we're discussing the good life, what's the best life, and yesterday we covered practically to remove consequences from your life, and two, we discussed pleasure, that you should, a person has the right to have pleasure in their life. Okay? The next thing is conflict. Okay? Now, there are two kinds of conflict. There's a conflict where two parts of you are in conflict. There's two parts. There's like a person has a conscience, a person has an animalistic desires for pleasure, and they are in conflict. Okay? That's one type of conflict. There's another type of conflict where you in conflict with reality. You try to change around reality you try to change around reality to fit in with your emotions. Okay? Now, we find that the most people have an inner conflict, and therefore they're paralyzed to able to operate. They basically operate what society gives them the right to operate. Usually, that's like mediocrity. Most of the people are like that. There's a few people that they go beyond their personality, and they try to change. In other words, their battle is that the physical world doesn't satisfy them, and they keep trying to turn around the physical world. Like the extreme cases, like Hitler when he was in the bunker, so he was sending out troops that didn't exist, and if anybody tried to tell him that he didn't exist, he would just go crazy and start screaming. He wouldn't listen. Like, I mean, of course, that's totally crazy. That's why they go crazy, because they're trying to change reality, and at a certain point, reality kicks in, and that's when they're really in trouble. Okay, as long as they can fake themselves out and feel that they're winning over reality, so then they feel good. But as soon as reality kicks in, so then they're really in trouble. So, now the Torah helps you deal with conflict also. Okay, through an understand, because they study the psychology. You see, the Rishonim definitely had an understanding of psychology. And through the understanding of psychology and human nature, then you can start dealing with your conflict. I'd also like to go back to pleasure, okay, for a minute. And that is that we say that a person should partake of pleasure except in two cases. What if it's against halacha? If it's against halacha, you can't partake of that pleasure. And two, if there are any consequences, you shouldn't partake of that pleasure. Otherwise, the person should partake of pleasure. By consequences, I'm talking about the bad consequences. Right, the question is that there are consequences that if you're eating ice cream, right, now you can't be learning. So you're wasting time in learning. So therefore, there is a consequence. Okay, that is the question. Right, you have to understand that learning has two motives. One is for enjoyment, and one is for practicality. Learning. Ideas. Studying of ideas. Okay? So the thing is that if you're doing it for enjoyment, then you're not enjoying practicality. Let's talk about practicality. Practicality, there's a certain amount of time that you need to learn the practical. That's it. You know what I mean? There's a certain amount of time. You put in a certain amount of time and you could get a good practical life. But then there's the pleasure part, right? Now, if you enjoy learning to such an extent that it's more enjoyable than other physical things, so then you should partake of learning instead of the physical pleasures. But if you enjoy learning and you enjoy physical things, then there's no reason why you shouldn't enjoy the physical things. If it's only for enjoyment, then there's no reason why you shouldn't enjoy the physical things. And the physical things, when you enjoy the physical, it clears the mind too, gives you a break, so that when you sit down to learn, you enjoy it more. There's certain people, like, for instance, they could have a clear head, let's say, for 2 hours a day. They could really enjoy learning. I'm not talking about cramming. I'm talking about thought by ideas, not memorizing. The person thinks that is a certain amount of creativity that a person has insofar as time is concerned. Now, after a while, he's just not creative. He has to take a break, so then he should partake of the other type of pleasures. That would be the break, and then he should come back to learning. Okay, the question is that should you learn to get into Olam Haba, okay? Let's say then it becomes a goal to get into Olam Haba. The answer is that Olam Haba is a fact. We, according to Torah, we accept the idea that there is a place to come. There is a place to go. After you die, you can go. If you're worthy, then you go to the world to come. Okay? But we say that the correct motive for learning is because you're drawn to truth itself. Because you're drawn to the truth. That is the motive. That is the motive for learning. It's not that there's not... In other words, if you don't have that motive yet, then you could use Olam Haba as a motive. You could use the world to come as a motive. But however, the ultimate motive in learning is that you're drawn to truth. Okay? And when you're drawn to truth, so then you relate to the truth, that, and God is the source of all truth, so it will definitely lead you to God. But the motive is drawn to the truth. And therefore, Olam Haba is a fact of life, that if you're drawn to the truth and if you study Torah, so then you will have a portion in the world to come. But that isn't the ultimate motive. Our sages say that a person should enjoy the physical world, and if he doesn't enjoy the physical world, he doesn't have a portion in the world to come. Okay? Now the question is, that's definitely against our philosophy. Our philosophy, the philosophy of Torah, is not that the purpose of the world is the enjoyment of the physical. Even when we enjoy the physical, I mean, you have to be very careful what physical you choose, and definitely a person should try to be drawn to the truth and through the Torah and enjoyment through the study of Torah. So the question is what is our sages talking about? You have to be a little careful with this chazal. Definitely, what gives you a portion in the world to come is that you know God gave the Torah on Mount Sinai, and you have a conviction about the 13 animamim, 13 basic principles of faith. Okay? So, therefore, when they're talking about Olam Haba here, it's talking about different levels. Okay? It must be talking about different levels. So, the Rambam and Albo says definitely that what gives you a portion in the world to come. Okay? So, even if you don't have this, even if you're not drawn to the world of truth, you know, but if you study these ideas and you have a conviction about it, so then fine. I would say that this would give you a higher level, what we're saying here. Okay? Now, a person is guided by two parts. Either he's guided by the conscience, or he's guided by the animalistic part of him. Okay? Now, the enjoyments come from the animalistic part. Right? Now, if you are a person that is constantly goal-oriented, and you must have a feeling of success, that's what drives you, so then you cannot enjoy and be drawn to the enjoyment, because that's not your nature. Your nature is to be totally goal oriented, you see. So you can't be drawn to the truth by, in other words, it's a conscience type of thing, like a goal. It's not the object itself. You're not drawn to the object itself. To be drawn to the object, it's via enjoyment. Enjoyment is what, when you're really drawn to a thing, it's something that you enjoy, that draws you to the object itself. If it's the conscience, you use an object to satisfy an emotion. In other words, I want to, I'll play ball. It's not that I enjoy playing ball, I enjoy winning. So I use ball as a means of satisfying winning, but it's not ball itself. But first, like, or exercise. You could exercise because you want to beat others out, you're thinking of who I'm going to beat out, or you could exercise because there is an enjoyment in the process. Now, if you cannot enjoy things in the physical world, so then how could you enjoy learning? Because you're not a person that enjoys things, you see? So if you can't enjoy it, then you can't be drawn to it. It's only used as a means for something else. That's why even Olam Haba cannot be a goal for learning. I mean, it is a goal as a wrong motive, and you could use it until you get to a higher level where you're drawn to the truth itself, you see. But however, if you do it only as a means to satisfy, because I'm a goal, I want to reach a goal, so then it's not the learning itself that you're relating to, you're only relating to the goal. There's no difference between that goal, using learning, or anything else. The only benefit in using learning is that as you learn, then after a while you can be drawn to the truth itself. You see? So therefore, that's what it says, that if you can't enjoy the physical, then you can't, it's not that you won't get a portion in the world to come, it's definitely a certain portion, a certain level you won't get. There's an Abarbanel in the beginning of Shemos that he says that the purpose of the Abarbanel says the reason for God putting us in Egypt first is because there's a certain purification process that you go through. If you go through terrible catastrophes, there's a certain purification process that you must go through. We'd like to try to understand what this purification process is, which will include, you know, all the catastrophes that Jews had throughout the history, like the Holocaust and the Romans and the Babylonians
and and when we're in exile, we're in different countries, all the catastrophes that we happen. So we'd like to deal with why, what is the benefit if God is doing it, then what is the benefit for Klal Yisrael? What is the benefit for Israel for that type of torture? Okay? Now, if life is smooth, life goes smoothly for you, then there's really nothing to think about. You just accept that life is going smooth. Okay? Let's say there's a problem. Okay? Like, the problem is you come to school. You have homework, you have tests, you have discipline. Okay? Now, suddenly you're in conflict. Okay? Now, the question is how to relate to that conflict. Well, there are different ways. Some people spend their life complaining about the situation. Some people get angry with the authority that's forcing them to come, like parents, or forcing them to do the work, like teachers, and they just get angry with these people and outlet for their anger. But however, they suffer. There is a third way of dealing with it. And the first thing is there any benefit in this for me? Is there any benefit in going to school, let's say? Now, let's say if you come to the conclusion that there is, so then you have to say, well, that's reality. Reality dictates that I should go to school for this benefit. And true, there are painful things, but you have to live with the pain because of the benefit that you gain. Now, if you can't work that out and you still feel the pain, that means the idea that school is good for you is not real. In other words, you don't have a conflict in looking two ways when you cross the street. Because it's so real to you, yet your life is in danger, you just do it, you don't think about it. But the reason why school becomes a conflict is because it's based on an idea. And ideas, there's a training period where tip ideas to become real. Okay? And if the ideas are not real, so you can work it out all you want, there's not going to be any changes. Okay? And you'll still be either a complainer or an angry person. Okay? So therefore, that shows you, if you see the idea and benefit of going to school, and you still have the old pain, then it shows that that idea, even though you know it in your mind, is not real to you emotionally. Emotionally, you still don't buy it. That means you have to work on dealing with straightening out your reality. Either you have to go over the idea again. Sometimes it's a matter of reviewing that idea, or reviewing ideas in general until it becomes real. Or there might be an emotion that's stopping you. Then you have to investigate the emotion. Okay? Let's say you come to the conclusion that there's no benefit in school. Okay? Now the question is, can you get out of going to school? Well, your parents are going to torture you or murder you. You can't go. You know what I mean? You're reliant on your parents for a living. There's a certain reliance on parents, and that you feel that you can't go, so you must accept that reality. So even though school is of no value, you must accept the reality that you're forced into a situation against your will, which those things happen in this world, that you're forced, even though there's no benefit, but you have no way out. Let's say, for instance, you have a job and you don't like your boss. Fine. If you can't get another job, then you have no way out. Even though there's no benefit in the way the boss is acting to you. You could do your job very well any way he acted. And you are doing a good job. But he's a jerk, the boss, you see? So then you must accept this as a reality, even though there's no benefit. I must live in it. You see what I mean? In other words, when you're complaining or when you're angry, that means you're really denying reality. You're not accepting reality. Acceptance of reality means that, okay, I know this is not a good thing, or I have to do it and it's painful, whatever it is, but I know it's a reality, I must do it, and that's it. That's an acceptance of reality. Now, that is what we call perfection of the soul. Perfection of the soul means that where you get your mind into reality and work out the areas that you cannot accept from reality and work it out so after a while you do accept reality. You see what I mean? That is what we call perfection of the soul, that where you start learning to live within reality, and part of that reality is that there is a God in your relationship to God. There are people that relate to God correctly, but they're still not totally in line with it. Maybe their mind is in line with it, but their emotions are not. So then they have to review the ideas. That's what that's one of the benefits of tefillah, of prayer. One of the benefits of prayer is that you review these ideas again and again so as to help you get the correct idea. You see? So you become in line with reality, and that way you get close to God. You see? Now, a holocaust is just the highest level of torture that you must deal with your problems, that you're forced to deal with your problems. You can't deal with it on the spur of the moment, but with training through the life, when, like in these discussions now, you start training yourself, then when you get into such a situation, then you can relate to it correctly. That is the benefit, and that is the purification process that the Abarbanel is talking about, that you reach a higher level of truth and reality in that type of situation. The question is that how many people did, let's say, the Holocaust did drive away from Torah? That happens to be true. Of course, when they saw a terrible thing like that, they asked the question, where's God's justice? But they're only asking the question at the time of the situation, then you're right, then they can't straighten it out. But for those people that studied before and had the knowledge before, then they would, at that time, they were perfecting their life all along. That was their life's work, constantly working on ideas and constantly working on the emotions that were in conflict with those ideas. Then when they got into that type of situation, then they'd be able to act correctly. Well, I mean, the obvious example is Rabbi Akiva. But even during the Holocaust, they had people that were in the Holocaust that asked questions, different things that they were allowed to do or not. They would find a rabbi to ask a question that was a matter of life and death. Let's say you were on a death line, and you had a way of sneaking out. And if you would sneak out, they wouldn't have the right number, so they'd have to take somebody else. Because the Nazis work by numbers. So therefore, somebody else will die. So he asked the Shaila if he's allowed to sneak out. I mean, he is a person that's living a totally logical life under the worst type of circumstance. It shows the development from years of living the Torah life that he makes correct decisions. You see? It's not only Rabbi Akiva that did it. Each person, according to their level, according to what they're dealing with, each person can reach a level where they could deal rationally in the worst situation. But that must be a lifetime training. It's a lifetime training. So the question is, should you spend your whole life training that maybe if a Holocaust comes, I'll be able to act correctly? The answer is no. The answer is, that is my lifestyle. My lifestyle is to get in line with reality and get closer to God and deal with all situations in everyday life the same way. That's why I started with, let's say, with school, a problem with everyday life that you have to deal with. You see, that is the way you should live your life. The ultimate result of that type of life would show up in the concentration camp. But you don't live, you don't train your life just in case I get into concentration camp. The question is, what's the benefit of having something like a Holocaust? How many people are going to be able to work out the Holocaust like these people that asked Shilas? Let's say there was 100. Let's say there was 1,000. Talking about 6 million people, how many people actually were able to come out sane that were that worked it out sane when they got out of there? That's the question. The answer is that I don't know if God works by numbers or he works by, there's a certain product that God wants, and the Torah was made to produce that product. I think everybody can become that product if they decide to put their life to spend time in studying. It's not, you don't have to study, you don't have to study 100, you don't have to just study 20 hours a day. You could do it in an hour or two or 3 hours, depending on the person, what abilities he has and how much time he has. If he has more time, of course, he'll get it better done. If he doesn't have enough time, then he can still get it done. It'll take him longer. But the thing is that God is interested in a person that is totally guided by a sense of reality, no matter what the situation is, and therefore he acts correctly in any given situation. That is the product that he's looking for. The reason why God needs a nation, he needs a nation that is guided by this type of philosophy so as to produce more of these type of people. It's a better chance of producing more of these type of people. The whole purpose of the nation is the whole nation should make it. It's just when the nation doesn't make it, that's when God forces us to be in that type of situation for purification process. But however, the thing is that ultimately, what God wants is that the whole nation should be living this type of lifestyle, where a search for truth, and in that way a search for God. And that their relationship to God is that even in catastrophes, they can work these problems out, that they can still live with the truth. In other words, every human being has an ability to make it to this level. Most human beings do have that ability. Most, you know what I mean? But you don't have to be a high IQ person. It's just a matter of certain type of knowledge that you need. Okay? The only thing is what you need is that commitment. The reason why so few people make it is because of the lack of commitment. It's not because of the lack of ability. The lack of commitment. That's your job, to make that commitment. And the purpose of these discussions is to help you see the benefit of that commitment and the lifestyle of that commitment and why God wants it and the importance of it, and to see the truth that God really gave it, so that when you see this, then you can make that commitment. That's the purpose of the discussion, to help you make the commitment. Okay. There were many different ways of relating to the Holocaust. There were capos that they sold their souls out to the Nazis just to be protected by the Nazis. Didn't do them any good. And there were other people that killed people to get food, and the people that stole from others to get food. There, in that situation, shows you true, brings out different parts of you that are there. But there are people that were able to work out their conflicts because of years of training in the life of Torah, so they're able to work out and to live the life of Torah in the Holocaust. You see? And you see from, let's say, for instance, like Yosef, he had an ego problem, so God put him in a dungeon for 12 years. You see, when God relates to people, it's to help them perfect their soul to be able to search for reality and truth. That's what you see the purpose is. Just like a person goes to a doctor, he has surgery, he's cut, he has the needles put in him, it's for the benefit to cure him from a problem. So are difficult things in life, or catastrophes in life, are for the purpose of benefiting us, to help us to find the truth and to bypass and to overcome, or to bypass or to recognize our emotions that are not in line with it and to deal with it. That is the benefit of having problems in life. No problems in life, you're not going to know how to deal with life. Okay, the question is that what about when little children were killed in the Holocaust or in Egypt, where they were thrown into the river? So the answer is...